appearance of any type of impropriety. So, you know, I don't know that expanding the court would have an impact. I know that's one of the things that's being discussed, but I'm not certain if that's the answer here. But I do say this. And Terry, I'd love to hear your impact, your thoughts on this. When we're looking at the current makeup of the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court now, and we think about this Christian nationalism philosophy that seems to be running through it. And the Christian nationalism philosophy, as I understand it, is one that says that, you know, basically the faith of the United States is Christianity, and we're going to force this on all of our citizens through our opinions. When they start with that, then you start looking at what they did with the Dobbs decision. You start looking at how the lower court even operated in the Alabama IVF decision. And, you know, the whole voting rights, all of that, you know, it all starts to sort of line up with regards to what this Supreme Court has now teed up, because they've teed up an environment where people don't trust the court. And as a result, they have the lowest approvability rating in its history. And so the question sort of becomes, Terry, we're looking at all of this, how do we respond to this? And I'm going to tell you, in my belief, Barbara and Terry, wrapped within all of that is this Project 2025 that they're talking about.
That's right.
Even more dominant Christian nationality control.
Yeah.
Terry, where am I wrong?
But before, Terry, before you answer that, Daryl, I just want to make one thing clear to our audience. They're saying that, you know, we are a nation that has, you know, separation of church and state, allegedly. And they're saying that under Christian nationalism, that we should be guided by what, you know, by Christian principles. But be very clear, people, they're talking about conservative, almost anti-Christian principles, because they're not talking about feeding the hungry. They're not talking about sheltering the homeless. They're not talking about the things that Christ cared about. They're talking about controlling women and their reproduction. They're talking about racism, you know, white supremacist notions about who is superior to whom. They have some really horrible far-right extremist views. And this is not the Christianity that most people go to church to celebrate every Sunday. I'm sorry, Terry. I had to reel myself in. Okay, back to Daryl's question to you.
I mean, Barbara, you're exactly right. The Christians that I hang out with, are nowhere near the hate-filled, frankly, hate-filled and authoritarian Christian nationalist ideology. And where all this lines up, there's a fascinating study that was recently released by the National Partnership for Women and Families.
Yeah.
And what it does is it ties together the recent attacks on voting rights, you know, starting in 2013 with the Shelby decision that begins to hack away at the Voting Rights Act. And the most recent, I think it's Anderson, is the most recent decision that really is putting nails in the coffin of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So they're looking at that, and they're looking at the Dobbs decision that overturns Roe versus Wade. And what they're pointing out is that if you look at the state with the most restrictive voter suppression laws. These are laws that have come roaring out of the woodwork after the 2013 Shelby anti-voting decision that Supreme Court put down. So you look at the restrictive anti-voting states, and then you look at the states that have restricted abortion care and really passed what are absolutely forced birth policies in those states. They line up. They line up. The states with the most restrictive, in general, the most restrictive voting provisions, the highest barriers to voting, those are the same states with the most restrictive bans on abortion care in this country. And just to sort of play out what that looks like in real life. What we know is that when women are forced to carry a pregnancy to childbirth against their will, on average, women who are forced into birth experience higher rates of poverty, of food insecurity, housing insecurity, of mental health issues, and of ongoing reproductive health care illness. That's the result of forced birth policy, which the Dobbs decision says, hey, I'll use the state by state, they can decide. And, you know, Alito, in one of the most remarkably hypocritical statements in his Dobbs decision, said, well, women are not without, you know, agency. They can vote. But you look at the states where abortion bans have been implemented, those are states where it is hardest for women to vote. And once the abortion ban is put into place, it becomes harder and harder and harder for women to have any voice in their community. Why? In mental health issues, ongoing OBGYN health problems, poverty, housing insecurity, food insecurity, all of those things are hard enough to endure, but they are also barriers to civic engagement. It makes it harder to vote. It makes it harder to pay attention to what's going on in your city council or in your school board or in your state legislature. So there's this complex, so sort of a web of suppression that is currently being woven by the Supreme Court's twin attitudes about A, voting, and B, women's access to reproductive health care.
Wow. And Daryl and Terry, you know, I just want everybody to also understand that the Alexander case that Terry was referring to, that the Supreme Court issued a few weeks ago, that we have been just really horrified by, because it's such a bad and wrong-headed decision. But we wanted to make sure people understand that that case has a lot to do with this new case that just came out yesterday from the 11th Circuit, in which they struck down the Fearless Fund grants by at least a, quote, issued a temporary injunction, a restraining order that basically says that this grant program set up by Black women to help Black women, because there's such a low percentage of entrepreneurs in this country, to give them special grants that Black women raise the money for of $20,000 to start a business, that somehow that violates the 14th Amendment, which is what the Alexander case said about the racial redistricting, decision that was made by the lower court there in South Carolina, saying that, that the 14th Amendment, you know, taking this whole doctrine that Roberts has been spewing, from the, students for fair elections, Fair Admissions case versus Harvard, and saying that the 14th Amendment bans any kind of racial programming that even helps Black folks, that seeks to equalize the playing ground, that seeks to make up for all this historic racism and all these evils that we still suffer from because of that. I mean, this decision, how did it strike you, Daryl? How did it strike you, Terry, when you heard about this, that this is what the 11th Circuit is saying to date?
You want to go first?
Yeah, let me just say, when I saw that decision, and I thought, so when private actors, or these are private actors, this is not the state
right
making racial distinctions. This is a private organization making racial distinctions. And when they try to do something good for women of color, that gets smacked down. But when the state, when state legislatures do something, and I should have said earlier, these abortion bans, you know, the restrictions on women's access to health very disproportionately harm women of color in state after state. So when the state does something to harm Black women, that's okay. But when a private enterprise tries to do something to help Black women, oh, that gets struck down by the federal courts. This is what tells us that the federal courts can't be trusted. You think the Supreme Court is not trusted? It is not trustworthy, in my opinion.
All right, now, Daryl.
I'm just going to put an exclamation point on what Terry just said. My goodness, you can't say it any clearer than that. You know, I think the whole thing to me comes down to the Equal Protection Clause, right? And what happens is that, you know, a clause that we believe to be embedded in the amendment to help equalize things for those that were disadvantaged, the African American and the voters of color, is now being turned from a shield to a sword to attack them, so that it can't be used in that way.
Yeah.
And that's what I find most problematic about this. And, you know, and as Terry so eloquently stated, you know, you can't trust the Supreme Court on issues of equality right now and or anything dealing with any of the voting rights at this point in time. You don't want to put it in the hands of this court based on what they've shown you that they will do. So, you know, Barbara, that's my read on it. I think it's incredible that you start telling me as a private person with my private money who I can give it to. And what standards
isn't
I
have something?
To give somebody my money. Mm-hmm. Come on now.
But these white supremacists don't want black people advancing. They don't want black people to have real equality. They still think that whites are superior and should have everything. You know, I just want also for people, when we were talking about the court reform, the only option out there isn't just expanding the court. There's a lot of good focus that we'll talk more about, especially during our national teletown hall on June the 24th at 7:00 p.m. Mark your calendars. We'll be talking about it more. There'll be more information on our website at tjcoalition.org. We're going to be talking about the other options, such as term limits, which is a real viable one that we should be definitely looking at. But also, we got to keep this whole federal court from going MAGA, which is what we're seeing with the 11th Circuit. And we have all these MAGA state attorney generals out there causing problems. There's so much to talk about, but our show is coming to an end. Woo! Let me give it to you, Daryl, and take us home.
Thank you, Barbara. I certainly want to thank Lynn Whitfield for her participation on this show today, as well as Allison Neeswood and her participation. Obviously, the one and only Terry O'Neill, Attorney Terry O'Neill, a member of the board of the Transformative Justice Coalition. We're always appreciative to have Terry, you on the show and the perspective that you bring. Folks, June 24th, we will be having our next Teletown Hall. We encourage everyone to follow us on Facebook, follow us, you know, follow Barbara Arnwine on X, or now formerly known as Twitter, at Barb73. You can follow me on Twitter, or formerly known as X, as at free, the letter D, free to vote Daryl, at free to vote Daryl. Folks, until next Tuesday, noon, Eastern Standard Time, get off the sidewalks, get onto the streets, and take it home. Folks,
yes,
we appreciate you being there. Come on, Barbara.
Yes, and folks, a big shout-out to Christine Wood and DFAT. Be sure to join us on June 13th. Go to tjcoalition.org and sign up to be part of the John Lewis Voting Rights Day of Action. We are the future. We are the ones who control what this country shall be. They cannot stop us. We are unstoppable. Don't you dare ever put your head down, keep it raised up, and keep inspired by John Lewis and all of the other greats. Thank you.
Peace, everybody.
Peace.
The preceding program was paid for by Barbara Arnwine.
I had an important job. And it wasn't just a job, it was keeping my brothers and sisters safe. And coming back, it felt like kind of thrown away. It's like, you're useless. You know, we don't really have a need for you now because you can't really do anything for us. That's the way I felt. If it hadn't been for Wounded Warrior Project, I honestly don't know if I would be here. It was the camaraderie that I saw and had. It was like, I got my family back again. We all felt the connection, you know, like that brother and sisterhood.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Donna by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
WOL, Washington, D.C. W240D.